Hello, welcome back to the Bad Boxing Podcast with me, Tris Dixon, top trainer Adam Booth, and former world champion Alex Arthur. Today we're looking back on the fight that was Kell Brook's gallant attempt to dethrone one of the pound-for-pound best fighters in the world today, Terence Crawford. Alex, what was your take? I mean, it would have been a brave man to have bet on Kell Brook at the start of the contest. Did it go as you'd expected?
Well, pretty much. I actually did think, though, Tristan, it would have lasted a little bit longer. I think that Kell probably, the weight regain, I would imagine, which was pretty big, I think he would have been able to sustain a wee bit more stick from Crawford. But it wasn't the case. I don't know if, because of the weight making, his punch resistance was totally shot. Because, you know, we've seen Kell Brook hit by a bigger puncher, probably the biggest puncher in the past 20 years, you know, do a little bit better than that in terms of taking the shot. But he was caught by, basically by a jab, and his legs really did betray him quite badly. And the finish was quite quick and sort of precise. So, I actually thought it would maybe go 8 or 9 rounds rather than the 4. But he had success early on, and you know he showed flashes of the old Kell Brook, but just not enough for that fellow, who I think now possibly it's very difficult to argue that he is probably the best fighter on the planet, along with a few others. You know, Canelo being one in my opinion, and you know, I just don't think that there's many guys at that weight class that could cope with Crawford.
Yeah. Adam, what was your take?
I actually got a lot of thoughts on this one. There were certain elements of it that, honestly, not just in hindsight, I felt were predictable. I think that Father Time and lifestyle caught up with Kell Brook. What you had there was a young, fresh, ultra-talented, disciplined champion against an old ex-champion that's taken some knocks, has miles on the clock physically, as well as miles on the clock in terms of his lifestyle. I think being hurt by a shot like that just proved that time caught up with his ability to absorb, because it wasn't necessarily the most powerful shot. But I think that he's, like Alex said, his resistance has gone. I think he's had a long career, you know, and as far as British champions go, an incredible career.
Yeah.
I was surprised in the first couple of rounds at how Terence Crawford struggled to find the distance that he wanted from an orthodox stance. I actually thought that Kell just standing there with slightly stiff legs and just timing the jab as Crawford made the move surprised me. I thought that obviously Crawford's very crafty and he had a look at him at the start. He'd been out the ring for a while. But then if you listen to the American commentary, and if you listen to Andre Ward, he says, I think in the third round when Crawford goes southpaw, there are two reasons why he's going southpaw, either to set him up for something or because orthodox not working for him. And he said, that's exactly what I was thinking in the first couple of rounds. I was surprised that he was getting caught by a couple of heavy jabs. And he read it right. But that's what Crawford can do, right? Because he's so proficient southpaw and orthodox, he can do the same thing from different stances, which gives you totally different looks. It's a mirror look. So even though he might do the same thing from southpaw and orthodox, because you switch stance, it becomes a game changer. And of course, what it did was, firstly, it nullified Brook's jab. Yeah. So then what Brook did was he tried to reach in with the right hand, as he has done throughout his career. And as he reached in, walked into a solid southpaw jab that effectively ended the fight. So it was just an interesting exercise. But I do rate Terence Crawford up there with any fighter in the world today. I hope he doesn't suffer like Mike McCullum did. Mike McCullum never got the Ray Leonard or Tommy Hearns fights. He never got the Marvin Hagler fight. And because of that, his ultimate legacy level was slightly impinged because he wasn't given the huge commercial great career defining fights that he craved. Crawford deserves them now, because if you go through his resume, he's beaten everyone and he's beaten them in style, but he still hasn't fought people like Errol Spence. He's, you know, Brooke was past his prime. Don't get me wrong, I'm not criticizing Crawford at all. I'm criticizing the business. Now, Bob Arum has proved over the years that he'll work with other promoters to make these super fights come off. So the question is, does Errol Spence and his business element want that super fight? Because I think Crawford deserves it. I believe Crawford wants it. I believe Crawford would be the favourite. And I just hope, we get it.
What happens next? Obviously, we're talking about this PBC top rank split here. Spencer's got Danny Garcia in a few weeks, which is back on Premier Sports, who showed in the UK last night. But Crawford, I saw, was asked before the fight who he wanted to fight next, and he wanted Manny Pacquiao.
Well, absolutely, though, because he deserves, he doesn't just deserve like the unification legacy fights, he deserves the big money fight. And that's what Manny Pacquiao is.
Yeah, Alex, what do you think he can... Is the Pacquiao fight a win-win fight? Is it big money? And if he wins and looks impressive, then he's going to get credit for it? Or is he going to beat a 41-year-old inactive Pacquiao?
No, Tris, I don't think so. I think that because of Manny Pacquiao's recent performances, I think that he's still pretty much regarded as one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world. As we've seen against your man, what was
Thurman.
Adam's a big, or Adam was a big fan of this fight. What was his name again?
Keith Thurman.
Yeah, Thurman. Because his performance against Thurman, he was so on the ball that night. He was so sharp, and you know, he broke him down, like, I think mentally as well as physically. I think because of that performance, I think that's not so much catapulted Manny Pacquiao, because you can't really catapult Manny Pacquiao, but you know, it really did put him back on the sort of upper echelons of the, you know, the elite again. And because of the nature of the performance, I just think it showed that anyone that you know, takes on Manny Pacquiao and defeats him in future, well, within the next couple of years, let's just say, I still think it's going to be regarded as a massive win. You know, I'm quite sure both of you probably agree with that, but I think that a Terence Crawford Manny Pacquiao fight is so captivating and just like interesting to think about, especially for like guys with boxing brains that, you know, as soon as that fight's announced, you're going to start trying to break it down in your mind, what the tactics of both fighters are going to be, you know, what kind of, even what kind of sparring they're going to employ, like to try and sort of mimic the others. You know, I just think that whole fight is super interesting.
I suppose the wild card...
If Terence Crawford wins, it's still a massive win, but that has to happen soon. It can't happen in 18 months or something. It has to happen relatively soon for it still to be classed as a big win for Crawford, I think. Yeah, maybe, I think.
I suppose the wild card, when you look at the dynamic of the division, is Errol Spence, because obviously he coming back against Danny Garcia, he's had this horrendous car accident and people aren't sure he's going to be the same fighter. So obviously the best case scenario for Crawford is that Spence looks absolutely brilliant against Danny Garcia.
Yeah, because he said it, Tris, I think it was in the interview that you'd done with him. Was it not the interview? No, maybe it wasn't. We just watched that the other day, me and the lads, so it's fresh in my brain. I think Crawford said something the other day on some show, some YouTube thing, that if he does get a convincing win now over Spence, it's going to look like, you know, he was in a bad car accident, he wasn't himself again, you know, he was so badly beaten up for the accident that, you know, if he'd have fought him before the accident, it would have been a different fight. So will that be the case? Is that how people are going to look at it? I'm not so sure. Like you just said, you hit the nail on the head. If Spence comes back and looks fantastic, if the fight does happen and Crawford does look brilliant and does get a spectacular win, then it won't look like the car accidents had a big effect on Spence.
Adam, flip that back to last night. What Kell Brook did Terence Crawford beat?
Say that again. What?
What Kell Brook did Terence Crawford beat last night? Was that
one who, I think I said at the start, one who's prime is in the past. His prime in terms of a fighter and energy and health and resistance. I do think it's time to look on from that. And I think Alex's breakdown of the interest of the Pacquiao fight is incredible. I hope they make that one. Bob Arum didn't seem to mention it. And also, if Crawford did say, if I beat Spence now, people are going to discredit the win because of this. That shows that, you know, he's as analytical in the bigger scheme of things, at sort of looking at it objectively, as he is when he's in the ring. And that's an impressive statement to make, because it possibly is. But if Spence comes back, beats Garcia convincingly, and Crawford gets the Pacquiao fight and beats Pacquiao, and then beats Errol Spence, if that fight magically could ever get made, then you have to speak of Terence Crawford as a generational number one.
Aye, with 100%. 100%.
I hope he gets them. I hope he gets those fights.
I want to spend a little bit of time talking about Kell here, because you know, someone shared a stat with me online earlier saying that his three losses have come against three unbeaten fighters with a combined record of something like 92 wins with 80 stoppages between them. So
I've seen it, Chris. I've seen it, and your answer was brilliant. I really did. I really did love your answer. And I think he said something like, "Yeah, but he's had 40 something wins or something." Anyway.
Someone said that Kell's 3-3 in his last six. I'm like, yeah, but he's also 39-3 in his last 42 fights.
I really liked it. It was really good. It was awesome.
Don't bear bait it, Chris. Don't give any idiot that makes a comment like that is just that in terms of knowing boxing. Those three losses of Kell Brook. First year against three pound-for-pound claiming fighters.
Yeah.
Secondly, one of them, probably, along with Julian Jackson, one of the most fearsome middleweight punchers, middleweight punchers of all time. And then you've got a phenomenal southpaw who's just gone through the division prior to his car crash. And then you've got Terence Crawford, another pound for pound claiming number one. There is only three losses. If anyone wants to even hint at discrediting Kell Brook's career, let's not pay him any mind, because I don't think that's the level our podcast should be aiming.
No, but
the, great answer. I love your answer. Your answer was great. I really
thoroughly agree with that. And, you know, I share that sentiment. I think Kell's been a terrific fighter, you know, a world-class fighter. Obviously not the elite pound for pound, but obviously there's no harm in that, no shame in that whatsoever. But he's had that one good win against Sean Porter away from home. And then the resume at that level is bare, because he couldn't land those big fights when he moved to Matchroom. Obviously, we talk about Danny Garcia. We talk about, you know, those guys like, well, obviously the key one really domestically being Amir Khan that he's missed all this time. But he was linked to Marquez. He was linked to Pacquiao. He's been linked to Spence. We'll come back to Danny Garcia again. And it's, His career isn't what it could have been, is where I'm coming from.
Yeah, that's the business, isn't it? A question whether Kell lived the life as much as he could have done. But in also, he should have some money in the bank, right? That fight that he had against Gennady Golovkin hopefully paid him handsomely as well. But I agree with you. I just hope that doesn't continue to happen, but the business does paralyze the super fights.
Yeah, I mean, Alex, how highly do you rate Kell? Because obviously he's got that signature win over Sean Porter, but the critics now are lining up and saying that's all he's ever done.
It's just tremendously unfair, isn't it? I mean, when you look at his career overall, from, you know, the start of his professional career, you know, right up to where he is now, I think it's massively unfair that they are going to judge him on, you know, taking massive chances, you know, and maybe coming up short, a little bit short. You know, I think that Kell Brook's legacy as a world-class British champion, a world-class, you know, world champion for the UK is, I think it's solid. I think it's, you know, I think it's something that everybody in the trade respects Kell Brook and his ability and his talent, his punch power. And I just think that it's tremendously unfair. And I think we need to take our hats off to Kell Brook for the challenges that he stepped up to take, you know. Yeah. They're pretty bloody massive. And maybe he did come up short a little bit, but hey-ho, you know, he's taking chances that not a lot of British greats have taken. So, I'm for one, very respectfully, Kell and everything he'd done. And, you know, I know him reasonably well, not personally. You know, I think I allowed him to box on my undercard once when I was really... I think he genuinely did box on my undercard once in Edinburgh. But he beat one of my teammates, actually, Kevin McIntyre. His coming out party. He destroyed Kevin, who was a fucking great boxer as well, and inside a round or two, I think, if I'm right. And you know, I just think he's had a fantastic career, and I think he's a very, very brave guy for the challenges that he's taken, and I think that people shouldn't forget that.
Yeah.
I was surprised at how dramatic he unravelled, not from the shot, but from Crawford switching southpaw, because that was something that the Ingles do, obviously, all the time. You know, Kell's used to guys flipping from orthodox to southpaw, but maybe that shows exactly how good Crawford is in both stances.
Well, I think Adam touched on this massively earlier, Tris, and you know, it's really hard to, you know, to overrun Adam Booth and anything when it comes to talking about boxing. But I think, you know, that the punch resistance, lifestyle stuff, all that kind of things, definitely all came into play there. Another thing that came into play for me in a massive way that we've maybe never touched on in a big way is making 147. Yeah. I don't know how difficult that must have been for Kell Brook to make that weight, because he, of course, hasn't made that weight for quite some time now. As you get older, it gets bloody harder and harder and harder. And he is a big lad for that weight. I wouldn't be surprised if Kell Brook has got on the scales in the past and seen 185 or 190. I personally wouldn't be shocked. So to get back to 147 must have been bloody awful.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I'm always surprised by is when someone weighs in and they look the business, how the boxing fraternity sort of flip-flops in their favour because they got six-pack or whatever. In the sport that I do, you know, you can look $1 million and you won't be as fit as someone who just doesn't have the same body type. You know, when you look at Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury, I think that Fury's more likely got 12 rounds in the tank than Joshua at a high pace.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
But obviously, everyone saw Kell looking chiseled and was like, he's got this. Not everyone. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Kell just has one of those bodies, doesn't he? He's got a fantastic physique, and you know, he's got muscles on top of his muscles. He's got veins on top of his veins, and you know, he just looks fantastic. I think Kell Brook could probably, if he decided to get in shape when he was 65, he'd probably look like that. It doesn't mean that you are going to perform well in the boxing ring. Tris, anyone can make the weight. Tris, you could probably make 61 kilos if you wanted. Could you perform at that weight when you made it? You'd probably die, but you could probably still make the weight, you know.
You know, I remember watching a bodybuilding video when I was young, and it was the guys that got on the road to the Mr. Olympia, and those guys who were shredded and down to like 2-3% body fat, they were all sort of passing out left, right, and centre at the press conference. They could hardly stand up, but they looked obviously great.
There you go.
So
I will say something. I will say something here.
Go on.
Go on. I've been waiting on this anyway.
The body is one element, right? There's so many elements to being a fighter and a fighter at a high level. And the physicality is one element of it. It's only one element, because you then have the psychological and emotional. And on top of that, the energy, right? How much of his fighting energy has been lost throughout his career, throughout the losses, throughout the injuries, throughout the lifestyle, and throughout making weight, right? So you can present, but you can be an empty shell, an empty vessel. You can present a Bugatti body kit with a Fiat engine.
Brilliant.
And you don't know until someone puts the accelerator down whether you can go with them or not. And that's it. As soon as Crawford switched southpaw, picked up the pace in that fourth round, wanted to start putting the accelerator down, Kel just, it wasn't there for Kel anymore.
And that shot, I mean, Kel said afterwards it was a shot he didn't see. One thing that I was interested by, I don't know if you've seen the guys talking after the fight, Crawford and Brook, is Brook was saying, oh, you know, what were you thinking, you know, after the first couple of rounds? And I think he was trying to get some compliments from Crawford to say, oh, you know, you're a real handful, and obviously trying to give himself some, you know, some credit for those early two rounds. Did you guys see anything in those two rounds where you think, oh, this is going to be interesting? Or was it literally just feeling out for you guys?
The first round, I saw Crawford just having a look at him. And just like all the great champions, that first round is a reconnaissance mission. You're ready for anything, but if nothing's triggered, you're having a look and you're reading everything that's going on. Took a couple of heavy jabs. Same thing happened in the second round. Switched the game. And finished the fight very quickly once he made one change. You know, Crawford, we've talked about this recently when we were speaking about Tank Davis. Crawford has got a nastiness about him.
Exactly.
He's got a nastiness about him. And it appears that nastiness isn't just when the bell rings. He seems to carry that malevolence with him. And so, you know, when being asked to give some credit to Brook. I thought he did. He actually did compliment Brook after the fight, but he wasn't going to start conceding just to feed Kel's narcissism after he'd just done the job on him.
Let me ask you this, and this is to both of you. Is there any money in Brook Khan still? And is there any interest in Brook Khan still? When I say interest, I mean, do you guys have any interest in it? Alex, I'll start with you. Money, yes. Interest, no, or money, not so much now anymore?
Right, well, when it comes to the sort of financial aspect of that event, I think that everyone that would be involved in it would still be pretty happy to jump on that and make as much as they can, because in my personal opinion, I think that in the UK, it's still, because of the British characteristics and personalities in the UK and the way that we foresee sort of these events, I think there is still a lot of money to be made for everyone. I think that they're both at, although different, similar stages in their careers now, if they do continue boxing. And I still think that there is an element of that people would like to see who would win that fight. Despite the fact that both guys are now clearly past their best, punch resistance on both sides looking to be a little bit poor. I still think that there's interest in that fight, and I still think that there is promoters here who would jump on that and try and get both guys well paid and get themselves well paid as well. And it would leave everyone in the British public still a little bit excited, maybe even more than a little bit excited, maybe quite excited to see what would unfold.
Adam?
Boxing in recent years in the UK has transferred away across into, you know, your not just casual fans, but general sports fans and your nans and your granddads. So there's money in any fight if the promoters sell it the right way, and if the network sells it the right way. You could like look at how many pay-per-views now are being dropped on where years ago they wouldn't even be considered as main events, let alone pay-per-view fights. So absolutely there'd be money in the fight. Yes, I think there would be interest in the fight because people are just buying into the stories. It doesn't matter if they're past their sell-by date or if they're past their prime. The story can be spun and people will buy into it. Absolutely. Would I have an interest in it? No, I wouldn't pay for it and I wouldn't stay up late for it. If it was on and it was free, yes, I'd watch it.
I think that's perfectly fair. I mean, we've gone from obviously what would have been a stadium fight a few years ago to something that you could probably put on behind closed doors and got pay per view.
Maybe even like a very, very low level based on obviously Adam's analysis that he just gave, and a massive whole different spectrum as well. A bit like Mayweather Pacquiao. I think we missed it by about 5 years, 4 or 5 years.
We're going to wind up with a Tyson Roy Jones 20 years from now. We'll get that.
I know. It's probably somewhere in between, isn't it? It's not quite down there with Mayweather Pacquiao, but it's not quite up there with Tyson and Jones, is it?
I think it's closer to Tyson Jones.
You mean
it's not far off Ricky Hatton and Junior Witter.
Yeah.
That's the co-main, yeah, brilliant.
So let me ask you this. Obviously, I mentioned, you know, I have a whole lot of respect for Kell and what he's achieved in the sport, and I think if he was to bow out now, his legacy, you know, there'll be so many knockers because he's got that one defining win over Porter, and then people don't look at Sinchenko or Rabchenko, and obviously looking at the Jojo Dans and the other fights where he won't get that credit for being world class. But and I think that's a really unfair knock on him, because I think he's a better fighter than that. But at the same time, if I was advising him, I would say you've got nothing left to do. Like, just get out now, count your money, go.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't. I would say let's push for the Khan fight. Let's push for the Khan fight. If I was Kell and his team, I would strongly try my absolute best to make the fight closer to the 154 pound division than the 147. If the money was good enough, I'm quite sure Kell would probably put himself through whatever it was that he put himself through there to make 147 again. I certainly do think Khan can make that weight a lot more comfortable than Kell. I still think that fight is there. I think that's the one and only fight for Brook that's left. And hopefully they can negotiate something and maybe sort something out between themselves to make that fight. Whether or not they can, it's another thing, isn't it?
Adam, what's your thoughts on that? Time for Brook to walk or one last hurrah? Or was that the last hurrah last night?
I think every man's entitled to decide what they do with their future, as long as it's not harming someone else, you know, outside of boxing or combat sport. So it's up to him. I think he's earned the right to make a decision, but everyone's entitled to make a decision. Yeah. So, you know, only he knows how he feels and how much money he's got in the bank and what he wants. But I think you're absolutely right, Tris. He does deserve the props for being the fighter that he was, that didn't quite get the fights that he wanted, and then ended up having to take the biggest challenges out there. Triple G, Errol Spence, and Terence Crawford. And they are his only three losses.
Yeah, I know. When you say it like that, it starts to sound a bit ridiculous. When you start naming those names,
Yeah, you can't say he dodged anyone. And it does seem, from a vocal standpoint, it does seem that he's been the one who's made the running for the Khan fight consistently.
Yeah, oh, that absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then just a final thought on Terence Crawford. I mean, is 147 his ceiling, Alex, do you think?
We've seen in the past, he's taken pictures of himself on the scales before, and we've seen... I think the scale read him 175, 178. Terence Crawford is not a small guy. I remember when he came to Glasgow to challenge for the title against Ricky Burns, I had a brief conversation with him after the fight. And he was, even then he was 135. He must have been at least high 140s on fight night. And I would imagine that it's probably still, even 147, I would imagine it's quite difficult for him to make. He looked very lean on the scales, totally ripped, cheekbones showing. I think he can definitely fight at 154, given the opposition's the right pick or whatever. I think we're probably going to see the best of him at this weight class, I would assume.
Adam, what's your thoughts? And you know, he's 33 now. You just said that you wouldn't obviously tell someone when to retire, but do you think he'll have an end game?
everyone, whether it's a deliberate one or not, there's an end game for all of this. He might be 33, yeah, but he's a 33 with not a lot of miles on the clock. There's not a lot of damage. He looks remarkably fresh and spiteful and competitive at that highest level. That he, you know, we talk about energy. He looks like he still has an abundance of the energy needed to win at the highest level. And I agree with Alex. I think that 147 is probably going to be, firstly, I think, where the opportunity is for him to, build his legacy and his bank account. And I think that if you can never say never in this business, if all of a sudden there was a fight at 154, he's not just big enough, he's good enough. You know, he's good. Who would have thought, you know, look, Roberto Duran, lightweight, would have gone up and knocked out Iron Barkley, one of the strongest middleweights at the time.
Being a handful of haggler,
If grade fighters are grade fighters. Look at Ray Leonard beating Donnie Lalonde, right? Lalonde was a bit crude, but he was a big, strong, hard-hitting dude. Yeah. And Ray Leonard's a welterweight. So I think Crawford does fall into that category, that I think his ability and what he has innately inside him would make him compete and successful up through much higher divisions.
100%.
Yeah. Great. Well, it's been fun, guys. It's been nice to take it apart. Shame we couldn't manage to get together before the fight, because now we all sound like Johnny come latelys. But we all told you so. We just didn't actually tell you so.
We told you. The fact that Booth's been in hospital gives us a wee bit of escape ground, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah. The fact that Adam's got a new knee, as he shared on social media,
a new knee.
It gives Alex a get out of jail card.
Guys, he's moving house. It's a very dramatic party life.
You're not wrong. All right, guys.
He's played the moving house card quite a few times now, Tristan. I'm sure he did that 2 weeks ago as well.
Guys, thank you very much for joining me. We hope you've enjoyed the latest Bad podcast, and we'll be back soon.
Bye, boys.
See you later, fellas.
Yeah.
Great to see you, lads. Bye bye.
Good luck with the house.